This is a podcast from Seven Church, Bristol.
So, my name is Owen. If we've not met before, it's so nice to meet you. Welcome to the church, one of the co-lead pastors, and it's great to have you with us this morning, whether you're here in person or online. This morning, I was just mindful when I was up, just after I'd had my breakfast, that that song, Turn Your Eyes Towards Jesus. You know that song? Turn your eyes towards Jesus. And I was just like, it was just a great line for capturing where I was at this morning. It was like, yeah, I've not really turned my eyes towards Jesus. I'm not really giving my focus to Jesus. And it was just great to do that. So I just picked up my phone and I opened my journal app and just journaled a little bit and just wrote down my prayers to Jesus. And it was just a great way of just reconnecting with Jesus, refocusing my thoughts on Jesus. And that's what we're going to do now. If you've not feel like you've already done that this morning already, we're going to turn our eyes towards Jesus again. And that's why we do this. This is why we gather together in this rhythmic routine way each week, to give ourselves that kind of sense of pace and rhythm in our lives where we turn our eyes towards Jesus. Why? Because the sense of Jesus being in our lives is such an important thing for many of us. I know for me, my life would not be what it is without Jesus making his presence felt in my life. I would not be the person I am without that. I would be a very different kind of person in some ways. I often feel that my confidence is all drawn from being loved by God and having the presence of God in my life. And so as we pause to reflect on Jesus, I pray this morning that you might know the confidence that comes from being loved by Jesus, the assurance and peace and hope that comes from being filled with his presence, not just in a theoretical way, but in a very real and present way. And so I just want to encourage you this morning just to seek God's presence, to ask him to make you feel that secure, make you feel confident, give you hope, give you peace, give you joy. And that is our prayer together this morning as we speak. So as I said, I'm just going to say a few words first of all, and then we're going to share a poem written by T.S. Eliot, and then we are going to lead you through a meditation on the story that we're going to read about this morning. And that story is the story of the Magi following the star to Bethlehem. Now, the American writer Mark Twain used to take great pleasure, I don't know if you know this, in highlighting the fact that in the year of his birth, Halley's Comet appeared. And it appeared for the first time in 75 years. Now, commenting on this in 1880, he predicted that he would die in the year that Halley's Comet reappeared, in 1910. And in his autobiography in 1909, he wrote this: "I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It's coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it. It will be the greatest disappointment of my life if I do not go out with Halley's Comet. The Almighty has said no doubt. Now here are these two unaccountable freaks. They came in together. They must go out together." Have you ever heard that? Isn't that great? And he did die that year. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It's an often repeated phrase that an event is written in the stars. And in human history, people have always drawn links between the birth or coronation of a king and some astronomical event. There's a couple of examples I can give you. One of Rome's most formidable enemies, Mithridates, the king of Pontus, that's the area that we now call northern Turkey. In his propaganda, he made much of the fact that two comets had appeared, one on the occasion of his birth in 135 BC and one 15 years later at the time of his coronation. These, he claimed, heralded his divine greatness. And then in 44 BC, one that you may be more familiar with, during the games in celebration of Julius Caesar's life, a tremendously bright comet was visible in Rome, and it was regarded by the majority of the population as an indication that Julius Caesar had been received amongst the gods. History notes that Caesar Augustus, who was Julius's chosen heir, took it as a wonderful omen for himself personally and for his future career. In both of those stories, which are obviously ancient stories, a real celestial phenomenon appeared at the birth or coronation of a king and was regarded as a wonderful portent. So you'll no doubt therefore be connecting what I've just said to the star that appeared in the east that led the wise men or the Magi to Bethlehem. And we're going to read about this in Matthew 2, verses 1 to 12. So if you've got a Bible or you've got the app on your phone, you can open it up. Or as you can see, Bern has put it up on the screen. Bern is this mythical figure that sits in the balcony that everyone refers to, but you rarely see. Anyway, let's do this. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." I just want to say that I think Herod, if I'd been Herod, I would have been speaking to the chief priests and teachers of the law and saying, "Why on earth didn't you tell me?" But then Herod called together the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may too go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. And on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And after having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Very familiar story, right? So let me just dig around it a little bit, if that's okay, just to give us some more context. There is disagreement about what this star was. Some think it was the conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Venus. Others think that it could have been a supernova. And others suggest compellingly that it was a comet, citing the rising of a comet in the eastern sky, its movement over a 12 to 18 month period to the southern sky, and the presence of a tail to the comet in the evening western sky, pointing to a house in Bethlehem as the Magi travelled from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. Matthew doesn't enlighten us as to why this star led them to the conclusion that Messiah would be born in Judea. But if we look back through the Bible, there are some important connections to these wise men. So it's not a story that Matthew would have plucked out of nowhere. This is a story that Matthew wanted to highlight. Matthew says that they came from the east, which to them would have been the great kingdom of Babylon. Most of the great empires that conquered Israel at that time. Well, these generally came from the east. We think of the great Persian Empire. We think of the Assyrian Empire. We think of the Babylonian empires. All three of those empires dominated this area that we know as Israel now. But one particular kingdom, Babylon, was a city, an ancient city. You've probably heard of the Lost Gardens of Babylon, is that right? It's not somewhere in Cornwall, it's actually somewhere in the Middle East, between the Tigris and the Euphrates. And it was somewhere near what we now call Baghdad in Iraq. And it was the most powerful kingdom. It devastated Israel. And you'll know this because you've probably read about it in the Old Testament, how they devastated Judah, the southern kingdom. They devastated Jerusalem, and they carried off all of the Jewish leaders and educated elite off into exile, back to Babylon. Babylon, throughout the Old Testament, you will see, is the number one enemy of the Israelites. And one of those educated elite from Jerusalem was a man called Daniel. Again, you'll probably be familiar with the prophet Daniel, who, again, we read about in the Old Testament. And Daniel spent most of his adult life in Babylon and rose to a position of power and influence. The queen of Babylon, who is recorded in Daniel 5, verses 11 and 12, says this regarding him. This is Daniel 5, 11 and 12. "There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Your father appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems." So that's how they regarded Daniel. The Queen of Babylon thought he was amazing. And so he was appointed the chief of magicians and astrologers and diviners because he was able to interpret the king's dreams accurately and evidently was the most trusted wise man in the king's circle. I have no doubt in my mind, you may think differently, but I have no doubt in my mind that Daniel would have made every effort to teach the Babylonian astrologers the history of Israel and all of the Hebrew scriptures. He would have had a keen mind. He would have known the Hebrew scriptures. And certainly Daniel's words exist to this day in the Old Testament scriptures, but would have likely formed part of the Babylonian texts as well. Why do I say this? Because these three wise men were descended from that group of people in Babylon. And they would have been very familiar with Daniel's writings, I think, especially his prophecies about the Messiah. You might be surprised to know that in Daniel, the book of Daniel, it contains more prophecies about the arrival of the Messiah than any other prophet in the Old Testament. Really interesting that, because we don't generally quote Daniel very much when we get to the time of Christmas. In Daniel 9, the same angel Gabriel, who Matthew describes as visiting Mary and Zechariah to foretell the birth of Jesus, also visits Daniel and tells him that for a period of almost 490 years, from Daniel's point in history, that Israel will be dominated by other nations. But after that, Daniel, it says, God will send someone to rescue the Israelites, a Messiah. I'm just going to read that to you. Daniel 9:25. Now listen, it will be, this is Gabriel speaking, it will be 49 years plus 434 years from the time the command is given to rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, that is the Messiah, comes. Written in Daniel. Now it appears that Daniel's prophecy about the birth of the Messiah amongst the Jews meant enough to these Babylonians that they made a 700-mile journey on camelback to visit this Messiah. It's a fantastic story that is so deeply embedded in our understanding of the birth of Jesus that, like me and Claire, you've probably got little wise men statues at home, have you? We've got a few sets. They all come out at Christmas. And of course, the wise men are the grandest. They've got crowns on their heads and there's gifts that they carry. Far more impressive in some ways than the shepherds. It's a bit controversial to say that, isn't it? But the reality is that they're embedded in the Christmas story. And yet, when just turning our attention back to what Matthew said, when we read the story that Matthew describes, actually, there's a grittiness in the story as well. Okay, this is not all kind of celebration. It's not all fantastic news. Okay, there's a grittiness in the story. Before the baby is a few days old, his life is already under threat. Mary and Joseph escape with their newborn son to Egypt, and the Magi escape back to Babylon, away from the murderous Herod. And there's a grittiness in this story that the poet T.S. Eliot highlights in his poem, The Journey of the Magi. And so what we've done is Byrne, the mythical Byrne, has put together a little retelling of The Journey of the Magi, written by T.S. Eliot. It's actually, the voice you'll hear is T.S. Eliot's voice, and the images Byrne has put together for us to communicate something of the grittiness of this poem that reflects the grittiness of this story, The Journey of the Magi. So we're going to watch that, and then we're then going to turn our thoughts to a contemplation, to contemplate ourselves in the story of the Magi. So, Byrne, if you want to play that.
A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women and the night fires going out and the lack of shelters and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches. with the voices singing in our ear saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago. I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this, where we led all that way for birth or death. There was a birth, certainly, we had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death.
T.S. Eliot was a man who encountered Jesus himself, and for him, the transition from his old life to this new life in Christ was like a birth and a death, and he reflects that a little bit in his poem about the journey of the Magi. And I do think as we now turn our attention to contemplate this story in more depth, there may be something for you about that grittiness of the story that relates to your story, that the story of Jesus being born also involved something of death as well. The birth and death go together. And so as we contemplate this story of the Magi, I'm going to invite you to, if you like to, close your eyes and to imagine yourself in this story. And you might want to adjust your posture. Maybe you're sat on the edge of your seat a little bit, you know, and you're kind of just on the edge and your body's quite tense holding that position. So you might just want to relax your arms and your legs. Feel the seat against your back. Adjust your breathing. Maybe just take a nice, gentle, deep breath. Just allow your body to relax and become aware that you are not alone, that the Spirit of God inhabits every breath you take. As you breathe in, you might just imagine yourself breathing in the Spirit of God. As we begin our contemplation with the Magi, we're with them. Maybe imagine yourself that you have come with them too. You've been on a long journey from Babylon, 700 miles. What has that journey been like? Was it uncomfortable? Where did you stay? Consider your tired legs. The weariness of the walking. The movement of the camel underneath you. What did you eat on the way? Have you had a lot of time to think on this journey? Have you asked yourself, why am I doing this? What are you hoping to find? How did you get involved in this quest of the Magi? What was going on in your heart? Imagine yourself in the court of Herod. You were expecting to find a baby king there. What was Herod's face like when you told him why you were here? What did he make of the Magi's fine clothes and grand entrance? Is their response chaotic? Did you see any fear in his eyes? Did you sense the unease in the court? Did you believe him when he said, come back and tell me where the baby is so that I too can go and worship him? Did you feel the tension? As you continued the journey, that short distance from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, you're up in the hills, the skies are clear, and that star is still in the southern sky. Do you notice the anticipation in the Magi? You go from door to door asking for a baby. Is there a baby? Imagine your surprise when you are led to a stable, a dirty stable at the back. How does that moment unfold? How does it affect you? Are you surprised to see a couple of teenagers? Mary and Joseph, they're called. How do they look? Imagine gazing into the trough, this feeding trough, the manger, and seeing a sleeping baby. God manifest in this sleeping baby. Are you lost for words? Or are you overwhelmed with excitement? The Magi appear to be. They're already down on their knees. Their fine gowns and linens and cloths muddied by the straw and the mud on the floor. Bowing down before this baby. What do you do? What are you feeling? What does this mean? How will this encounter with this baby king affect your life? Emmanuel, God with us, in the most surreal way possible, in a baby born in a manger. Presence of God, fill your hearts and your minds with his love and his joy and his hope, just like the presence of this baby filled the Magi with love, joy and hope. May our lives never be the same again. Every time we contemplate the presence of God with us in the person of Jesus. And as we do on a routine basis now, we're going to physically eat some bread and drink a little bit of juice as a symbol of the presence of God with us. When Jesus, the night before he died, he was eating the Passover supper with his disciples, his followers, and he said to them, "This is my body given for you, broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And he passed around the cup of wine, which was all they drank at those meals. They didn't have any alternatives. He passed the wine around, red wine probably. And he said, "This wine, drink this in remembrance of me. This is my blood shed for you." He was obviously predicting his own death and his resurrection. And as we celebrate this, what we call the Lord's Supper now, There's two types of bread. I think one is one gluten free.
Yeah, one
the
brown.
It says there. So gluten free bread and gluten full bread. As we eat the bread and drink the juice, which is non alcoholic juice, grape juice, let it be a celebration for you of the resurrection of Christ, which gives us the hope that we have as Christians. We have hope because of the resurrection. And may the love of God, which transcends all understanding, the peace and the love of God that transcends all of us, and fill our hearts this morning as we take part in this physical act of remembrance and celebration. And so we'll do that now, and then I'm just going to invite you just to take that, eat it, and then if you've got kids, we're going to, upstairs, I'm going to just dissolve our service at that point. Please do go and get your kids. But if you'd like some prayer, maybe you've come this morning with a need that you just need someone to pray for you, then any of us who've been up here leading worship or leading the service today, we'd be delighted to pray with you. So come and find one of us, and we would just love to put a hand on your shoulder and pray the Spirit of God upon you. So please do take that opportunity. We'll put some quiet music on. Please do come and take freely as much as you want, and then go back to your seat. Okay, thank you.